of the before the war.
Podemos has been compared to Syriza. You've described some of the ways you're similar. How are you different?
We are different because we just have 1 year of history, and Syriza is a very well organized political party, and we have a different history and a different political context. I think the economic situation in Greece is different respect to Spain, and the economic situation too. But we think they are the possibility of change in Greece, and we admire them so much, and we are friends, and we will collaborate with them.
And do you have any words of advice for President Obama? Now in his second term, he can't run again. Whether he will be a lame duck president or a legacy president remains to be seen.
I don't know. I don't know what could I say to President Obama. There is something that I like. We both love The Wire, the HBO series, and I like Omar too. And I read that Obama like this character Omar, and I don't know.
Why do you like The Wire?
I think it's probably the best TV series in order to explain how the power works in politics, in media, in the organization of the work. I think it's a masterpiece. I used to teach political geography in my faculty, and all the time I was saying to my students, you have to see this TV series, because it's great in order to understand how the power works.
Do you have anything like that in Spain?
Not in that level. I think that The Wire is the best series.
Pablo Iglesias, leader of the Podemos party in Spain, which is leading in at least one poll for the national elections in Spain. He is speaking today in New York at the CUNY Grad Center, 365 Fifth Avenue, at 1 p.m. We'll also be posting an interview with Iglesias in Spanish on our website later this week at democracynow.org. A very special happy birthday to Neil Shabata. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Berker, Nate Felser, Aaron Mate, Nermeen Sheikh. I'm Amy Goodman with Aaron Mate. Thanks for joining us.
This is Donna with your WUSB Concert Billboard. Your Concert Billboard for Monday, February 16th. Robert Lighthouse will be at Iridium, Manhattan, 7 p.m. Captain Black Big Band will be at Smoke, Jazz and Supper Club, 7 p.m. Colin Hay will be at City Winery, Manhattan, at 8. John Paris will be in the Seals at BB King's, Manhattan, at 8. On your concert billboard for Tuesday, February 17th, Dave Clive's Nolan's Funk Band will be at Treme in Iceland, 7 p.m. Leon Bridges will be at the Mercury Lounge, 7:30. Jack's Waterfall will be at BBQ in Patchogue at 8. Kermit Ruffins and the Barbecue Swingers will be at the Blue Note, Manhattan, 8 p.m. Ms. Lauren Hill will be at Rock Trade in Brooklyn, 9 p.m. Looking ahead to Wednesday, February 18th. Lonnie Cook will be at Zebulon, Sound and Light.
Tune in throughout the day, each day, to hear Concert Billboard on the air, or see it at the WUSB website at wusb.fm/CBB.
All right. Hello, hello, good evening, everyone. It is 6:03 p.m. here at WUSB in Stony Brook, New York. You're tuned to 90.1 FM, and that time means it's time for Off the Wall.
Thank you.
All right. Good evening. Hello. Welcome. This is Off the Wall.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm in an enthusiastic mood today. I'm happy to be here.
Are you? Hey, I'm joined tonight by Emmanuel.
That's me.
Yeah, that's you.
That's me. I'm here sitting in the guest slot here, which is comfortable, and I have no responsibilities whatsoever, so I can actually drink on the air.
But you will not be drinking.
Now.
Just take a sip of something.
Okay. Yeah, I'm drinking coffee. All right. I don't know
coffee's
what you think
okay.
I meant by that, but
that's an acceptable radio beverage.
Well, okay, thank you, King of Radio Beverages, defining what's acceptable and what is not. But yeah, this gives me what I need to get through the 45 minutes. Yes, we only have 45 minutes tonight.
Yes, well, not enough time to get into station policy about drinks in the booth.
Is this a booth? This is master control. Hardly a booth. This is a sprawling.
So would you call it a control booth?
A control room. That's what CR means. CR1, control room number one.
And
of course, we put CR in front of every room here, so I guess that doesn't really mean anything.
We're clearly out of control.
We're totally spiraling to our plummeting doom. But before we get there, let us let you know that at 6:45 there will be an exciting basketball game. Assuming that the bus made it okay, the men's basketball, is it the men's basketball team? I'm pretty sure it is, have journeyed up to Albany, New York, where they will be kicking the ass of the whatever the Albany team is called up there. And that'll be coming your way in just a little while. But before that, we're going to let you know all sorts of other things as far as how the world is working and not working and things like that. If you're listening to us online, you might only be hearing one channel. You know, I'm curious. This will help us, Kyle. What channel? Could you write to us and tell us what channel you hear? Do you hear the left channel or do you hear the right channel? Because we have a bunch of computers that might be set up wrong. It's got nothing to do with the radio station. It's got to do with our setup back in the office. And it's possible we might be listening to the left channel only when we think we're listening to the right channel only. And it's kind of hard to tell sometimes. So if a lot of people write in and say, yeah, you know, you're only coming through on the left channel, then we know that we're wired backwards.
Well, I'm here I'm catching up. I'm sorry. I just was able to pull you back into stereo. Remember the paperclip trick?
Oh, that's a whole different thing, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's,
I just brought you into stereo.
That's over the air. We're talking about online only. You mean I was only in one channel over the air as well?
It was in my ear.
Realize that could mean that I was in no channel online? That's entirely possible.
And it also means that people don't really take paperclips seriously.
Not around here, no.
That's master control board.
Always been one of the problems.
The guest switch. When you have the guest mic switched down, helps have a paperclip.
Listeners, take note of this, because you might find yourself in this position one day. And the paperclip is not to be thrown away. I just felt myself lose something.
Yeah.
You're messing with my head here, Kyle.
Well, I haven't found an actual paperclip, so I have to hold it.
Okay. I seem to be coming through both channels, though.
Yeah.
All right. This is 45 minutes of microphone checks, by the way, until the basketball game begins.
All right. Thumbtack is now there. So, what do you have? What's going on?
Well, I printed out a bunch of stories, and I forgot to bring them, so I don't have much. But I do have this. I have a statement as far as the weather goes. It's cold outside. It's been cold outside. It's going to continue to be cold outside. There's snow. There's ice. There's sleet. There's all kinds of things going on. I think it's great because this is winter, and winter should be like this. I am so sick to death of people complaining about the cold. You don't like the cold? You know what? We could use your residences because lots of people need them. So you go to Florida, and we'll take your house. And that's just, you know, we'll pay the taxes and all that because people complain about taxes a lot up here. But we'll enjoy the cold because it's the northeast of the United States and we like the cold. Those of us who belong here, that is. Those of us who don't. Those of us who say things like, you know what, global warming is actually a good thing because it won't make things as cold in the wintertime. Do you realize people actually believe that? People think that global warming is an acceptable choice because it'll make the winters more pleasant. That is the mentality that we are dealing with in this day and age in this country. It's insane. I get into that conversation all the time with people who are upset at how cold it is. First of all, it's not global warming, it's climate change. You'll see all kinds of weird variations based on how we're messing up the environment. So you're not going to get off the hook that easily. Second of all, weather changes. You've got to adapt. That's called evolution, that's called being human, that's called survival. And I think most of us do a fairly good job of that.
Yeah. definitely.
Some of us can't handle it. We spin our SUVs out of control and cause all kinds of mayhem. Yeah, well, we need to talk about that. We need to, I think, train people a little better when they're operating large motor vehicles and things like that. And also, just common sense as far as staying out of the frigid cold and not getting frostbite and things like that. These are all things we're capable of learning.
Yeah, I'm certainly being run through the paces. I've never experienced weather quite like this. And all of our traveling, we were hoping to see some bit of winter evidence of storminess and cold. And I'm really, I'm impressed at my stamina, but also just, well, amazed at the ability to adapt, too. You know, you need creature comforts. You got to take care of yourself, of course. But boy, this is unlike anything I've ever experienced in my life. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's no problem for people around here degree.
It's a problem for people around here. It's a problem in a lot of places. But there are other places where people are better trained. I think Boston people are better trained, and certainly in Canada people are better trained for this type of thing. Here in New York, we get better trained, but every year it's the same thing. In November, December, the first snow flurry hits and everybody freaks out and flips their SUVs and everything like that. But then come February, when we're used to it, we're a lot better at it. In fact, you know, I've even missed the weather forecast the last few days, and I didn't realize it was going to snow today. And it snowed today, again, a couple of inches, no big deal. You know, didn't even shovel. So that's how it is.
Yeah, I think it trains you that first swell, the first storm, and then you kind of get into this thing. It's not complacence. It's not complacency. It's adapting and changing your behavior, you know, changing your pattern a little bit, and accommodating, realizing, and being prepared.
I intend to complain about spring, and because people don't complain about spring enough. They complain about how hot it is in the summertime, how cold it is in the wintertime, but nobody complains about, oh my God, look at that, the flowers are coming out. You know, nobody complains about spring, and somebody needs to do that.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be ready as soon as spring starts to threaten us. I will be there to complain bitterly about it and pray for a better place to be at that time of year. I don't know if you can avoid spring anywhere, but I'm going to try. But speaking of snow in Boston, I saw this story about a Boston resident who, get this, he is angry. He was angry that a parking space that he cleared was taken, and he got his revenge by burying the car that parked in it with the snow that he had shoveled out. Now, apparently they can do this in Boston. He put a space saver, which is some kind of informal system using household furniture or homemade signs or really just about anything else where you can mark a parking spot. And that means that's your spot. If you put something there and nobody will... that would never work in New York. You can't do that. You can't just put a desk or something in a space and expect somebody not to throw that aside and park their car there. This guy even shoveled a path to not only make it easier on him the next morning, but to indicate that indeed this was his spot. I don't understand. Why didn't he park there if he shoveled out this spot? Where was his car? Somewhere else? He has two spots? Space savers are legitimate in most of Boston. The city's parking regulations allow that a space saver can be used for as long as 48 hours. No kidding. Never heard about this. Do they have that in Seattle? Space savers? Kyle?
I've never heard of this. I mean, I saw it a little bit when we were traveling when they closed off, but I think that was more of a municipality thing. They would close spaces entirely or whatnot, put signs there for small, not cones, but just little geometric signs that took up the space and ostensibly said it was closed. But I've never really heard of this in the States and different spots around the country. No, not at all.
I think all you can do in New York is lie down in your space and maybe somebody won't park there, but you can't just mark it off. I mean, first of all, you can mark off anybody's spot. I mean, it's no real way to verify that that is indeed your spot and that you are the one who cleared it out. Anyway, the whole big thing, because this person didn't even wait 24 hours before they parked their car there. I was nice enough to leave the passenger door accessible in case they needed to get in for an emergency. This unnamed person wrote, and he's unnamed because he's afraid of retribution in this day and age. That could be what you get for something like that. Now, Boston has been repeatedly hit with snowstorms. They're expected to take second place on their list of snowiest winters. with whatever happened today. They've had 95.7 inches of snow, and they're less than a foot away from the all-time record. So that's something to be proud of, Boston. I don't know about all this saving parking spaces and burying other cars. It seems a bit silly. But, you know, one thing that does spring to mind, I was looking at some of the feedback to that particular article, and some people were asking, well, why didn't he just ask the person to move that car? In this day and age, you can't do that. You can't ask somebody to do something confrontational because you don't know what he's going to do. He might shoot you for confronting him. That's the society we live in now, where everybody is so angry and enraged and armed that we're all afraid to talk to each other about anything other than saying, have a nice day.
It does make things very difficult when people are unpredictable, and I think people are more hot-headed. I don't know. There's a lot of righteous indignation for whatever action you, and no flexibility, and that's really unfortunate because those are very important things in creating understanding and having cooperation on the most basic level.
Yeah, and it's another indication of how an armed society is not a polite society. It's a scared society. It's a society where people don't know what's going to happen next because people have this unusual power of being able to end their your life at a moment's notice if they feel like that's an option for them. And, you know, a lot of people get upset at ridiculous things. I've seen it many, many times. And you inject guns into it, it gets so much worse. We had the case in we had a couple of things happen this past week. The Chapel Hill, North Carolina, horrible case that demonstrated a number of things. These were three Arab Americans who were murdered by a guy who was allegedly upset by a parking space. Now, that is the way it was reported in the media. First of all, it wasn't reported at all in the media for a while that three Muslim Americans were killed by a how else do you describe him? A white American who basically killed them for some reason. But obviously, it was something that if the shoe was reversed, all right, if it was a Muslim American who had killed three white people in their home, that would be front and center in all the news channels, and it would be immediately classified as an act of terrorism or a potential act of terrorism. In this particular case, it wasn't even reported for about 24 hours. After 24 hours, finally it got some coverage, but there was a long period. I was looking all over the place. You saw me running around looking for this story, uh-huh. And it wasn't anywhere. Finally, when it was reported on television and on radio, they were focusing on, well, the guy was upset at a parking space, and that's why he killed them. Okay, fair enough. You know, the guy's upset at a parking space, and that's what made him blow his stack and kill three people. You know, that whole thing that happened in Paris last month, that was just an artistic dispute about a cartoon. You know, that's all that was. That wasn't any kind of terrorist act or anything like that. People just disagreed as to whether or not that was art or not. Yeah, if we're going to go that route, let's go that route for all the cases. But what this was really disgusting as far as the way it was reported. And I think maybe some people are finally seeing that it's not quite even the way the media works in this country when it comes to how people are portrayed based on their background.
Yeah, and it's a hypocrisy and unfortunate shading of the occurrence. You know, what's going on is portrayed in hypocritically not an opposite way. It's not equal and objective and mm-hmm. thus untrustworthy as a source. But yeah, lousy story, huh?
Well, yeah, it demonstrates a lot of things. This was somebody that maybe was not solely anti-Islam. He seemed to be anti-religion of all sorts. Now, what that demonstrates, that shows us that you can be an atheist and also be filled with just as much hatred as somebody who is religious. And I think what we really have to focus on, a lot of people say in a kind of simplistic way that religion is the root of all evil. That's the cause of all the problems. If you look at all the hot spots in the world, it's all based on religion. Eliminate religion and you eliminate the problem. That's really overly simplistic, doesn't work, all right? It's not about the religion, all right? Religion has a lot of good in it. I'm not religious myself, but I do recognize that there is good that can come out of religion, as there is good that can come out of anything where people come together for a common cause. But also, bad things can happen as well. The real problem is the intolerance of those who are different than you. And that's where religion is a big offender. How they deal with other people and different sects or different types of religion altogether, if they're filled with hatred or intolerance, then that is a major cause of problems. But that same thing can happen with atheists as well. They can be intolerant of all religion and filled with hatred and murderous rage, as we saw and potentially that case as well. So nobody's really immune from it. No one doctrine stands above all the others. It's how you deal with the people you disagree with. I think that is what defines the value of what it is that you believe in.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly I agree. I mean, I'm not a expressly religious person myself either, but I'm familiar with it, and it really has to be the all faiths evolve in such a way that they're cognizant of the contemporary context that they exist in and must cooperate in. You cannot just decide you're going to be separate and I mean, of course, there are religious exceptions and allowances culturally and legally, but you can't just live in a vacuum. Per se, you must at least have some sort of diplomacy from the community that maybe you might be a bit isolated culturally, but I think there has to be interaction with the greater world on a modern level, because there's been a lot of advancements insofar as our concept of where we are and how we're organized as far as land masses and nation states and stuff like that.
Right.
And it's fine to have your nation and your religion and these things, but to exist without recognition of other established norms and things like human rights and all of the sort of normal politically correct or polite things that we care about, I think that's an important thing to get a grip on and catch up, be a bit more modern about how you interact with other faiths, how you interact with on the world stage and are perceived and stuff like that.
But a lot of this is dictated by our leaders, by how our countries are evolving throughout the years. We look at organizations like ISIL and wonder how they came about. Well, look at our history just a little bit. 12 years ago was when we invaded Iraq, all kinds of horrible things happened as a result of that. All kinds of horrible things happened to those people. There was Abu Ghraib. There were all kinds of innocent people killed, all kinds of horrible things that happened as a direct result of our involvement over there. Now, those kids that have gone through that, kids say that were 12 years old at the time, well, add 12 years to that, and you get mid-20s. And some of those people have survived. Some of those people have managed to get on with their lives. Others are still very, very upset and angry at what has happened to their land, to their families. And that is what people mean when they say that the United States created ISIL, because they did. They created ISIL, they created Al-Qaeda, they created all kinds of reactions against the things that have happened in that particular part of the world that we have no business being in the first place. So all those people that were being mocked and dismissed, who were anti-war back then, unfortunately, their words have come true. And if you go back and look at what was being said at the time, not only in 2003, but in 1990 as well, the first Gulf War, these things will come back to haunt you. And yeah, they're coming back. They're coming back in a really horrible way. And you have to ask yourself, these are human beings just like you, as far as DNA goes, but the values are completely different. And it's almost like we're different species. And that's certainly how it's being portrayed in the media, that this is an enemy that we don't understand, that we simply can't even reason with. We helped to create that enemy. And, you know, a very similar thing happened after World War One, where the Germans were demonized and made to suffer in all kinds of humiliating ways. And that led to the rise of the Nazi Party. And we all know what that led to. So when you do these things without thinking them through, as George W. Bush continues to be guilty of, as well as his entire administration, you wind up paying the price for it many years later. And I just wish more people would see that and would hold those leaders accountable for creating this mess, because this is one hell of a mess. I don't know how we're going to get out of it. I really don't, because this hatred is very hard to extinguish. And I don't have an answer. I simply don't. I see things happen like what happened in Copenhagen this last week, where more innocent people were killed as a result of speaking out for freedom of speech. And it's basically people are speaking past each other. Printing cartoons is very different from attacking a religion. You might think criticism is the same thing as an attack, but it's, if you look at values, it is not, especially if you're speaking out because you've been told you're not allowed to speak out. Then you might not even believe the criticism that you're speaking. You might just be saying that because you've been told you can't say that. Very different thing than actual hatred of a religion. We've lost the ability to converse with each other, and this just leads to more and more confrontations, more and more generalizations. And it's just getting worse and worse with the passing weeks. I saw a story earlier about this this guy in Paris. He had actually come from Israel as an experiment, went to Paris, put on Jewish religious garb, and walked around the city for 10 hours, and then made a little video of about a minute and a half that comprised all the people that were saying anti-Semitic things to him or spitting at him or things like that. You know, horrible stuff, no doubt about that. But when I looked at the video, I wasn't that shocked, you know, because if you dress up in any outfit that's unusual for the area, you're going to get some kind of a reaction, and some of it isn't going to be very polite. And nobody physically attacked him at all. The people who were spitting, well, they could have been just spitting in general, not trying to dismiss any possibility that there's anti-Semitism. I know there is lots of anti-Semitism. But I think there are people that are taking advantage of it. And the number one person taking advantage of the existing anti-Semitism in Europe is Benjamin Netanyahu, the leader of Israel. He actually had the audacity to tell Jews of Europe that it's unsafe for them to stay there and they should all come to Israel now. It's basically like, you know, he's having an infomercial for Israel that he's beaming to all of Europe and saying, yeah, you guys got to leave there now and come here because it's going to be so great over here. You get to attack Arabs and foster more hatred and make that particular country an even bigger menace to the peace of the world by stepping on the rights of others. It was a horrible way to deal with a situation like that. And I think the right way to deal with a situation like that, if in fact it does exist, if there is a significant amount of anti-Semitism that is spreading throughout Europe, the way to deal with that is to bring more Jewish people into that area to challenge that, not to leave, not to to vacate the premises. We've been told that is basically giving up your right of freedom, and we wouldn't accept that for ourselves. We wouldn't accept that for other groups. Why should we accept that in this particular case? The other thing. If you were to dress somebody up in Arab garb and walk them through Orthodox neighborhoods in Israel or other parts of the world, what would happen there? I'd like to see that particular film as well. Point is, if you stand out, you're unusual, and if you represent something that is particularly offensive to a group of people, yeah, you're going to get reactions. And unfortunately, the Jewish garb is seen as something very offensive to a large number of people because of the actions of Israel, which does not represent the Jewish people, I don't think. It represents some of them, but doesn't represent all of them. So that's my view on that.
Well, yes, of course, indeed. Wow, you're absolutely right about the cultural memory part of that, and how all the people that were saying maybe, you know, this isn't a good idea years and years ago were onto something. That's what they were talking about, is this cultural memory that we have an impact, and we cannot react and be impulsive and or just treat things as a business matter that we're going to go in and occupy, or we're going to take control. I mean, it ought not to be that there is the profit motive in the way of the greater good. In other words, because it's globally strategic for us, that shouldn't be the the thing that's dictating our actions. We should be sensitive to what how those actions might change, and what has happened there, and what the region has become is case in point, as you said. So I think you're absolutely right with that. The cultural memory that these generations of young people coming up having kind of every right to feel a bit wronged, I don't know. And so I agree with that. And I mean, I would. Are you with the Sudanese president's camp? I would ask. He was saying this week about ISIS being the CIA. They invented it.
In a sense, they did.
I know. I'm kidding.
even if they actually sat around a table and created this group,
right?
It's the same effect as doing something boneheaded and invading a region and destabilizing it and creating all this reaction of hatred that goes on for generations. It's the same effect. Doesn't matter. They, in one form or another, they did create them.
He did come out this week and he mentioned that, and I think that's really fun because it's like it. It itself sounds, oh gosh, that's a spook thing. Like, he sounds crazy. But at the same time, it makes the point. It's exactly what I'm saying. What that cultural memory, what peace activists, people that didn't want us to be invading and allowing, you know, Halliburton or whatever to go on there to secure our interests. You know, national security can't just be thrown about the way we have been. Throwing it about, and it's really funny because he was ironically making the point that the CIA and our interests did create the context for a group like ISIS to thrive. So it's interesting to watch. So I love what you did there. You start out with a real funny, lighthearted parking dispute. We went from there to a silly, crazy, insane parking dispute, and also delved into the myopia of religion and uncooperativeness, and rounded that out with U.S. government policy and its setting the foundation for ISIL. So what's next?
Well, can I just say, just a full confession here, when I was reading about the parking dispute in Boston, I did not even think of the connection to the quote-unquote parking dispute in North Carolina. I saw that as I was talking about it. So
that's very
sometimes
clever.
Sometimes these things just happen.
No, that's artistry. That is a true
I think maybe what it says about us as a people is that we are so concerned about parking that we sort of – our whole lives revolve around parking spaces and disputes about parking spaces and things like that.
Back to back, that really illustrated the lunacy there.
FA Cup, we have an update for that because, yes, for some reason we've been following that since August. And we have been through a whole number of rounds now. And the latest round, known as the fifth round proper, took place last weekend. And the team that we are now following, which is West Bromwich Albion, they thrashed West Ham United 4-0. So they move on to the quarterfinals now. And that's pretty cool. I was watching another game, because you can see them on TV now. Bradford City is in the third tier. They were playing Sunderland, who are in the Premier League, the first tier, and they actually won 2-0. So that is the lowest ranked team now in the third tier. We started with a 10th tier team, Nuttington Griff. We started in the 10th tier back in August.
Yes.
Bradford City now, third tier, they move on to the quarterfinals. They get to play Reading, which Basically, they're a second-tier team, so they made off pretty good. They could have been paired with Manchester United or Arsenal or somebody like that, but they didn't. So that takes place in a few weeks. I watched the draw for that. What they do is it's like the lotto.
Yeah.
They have these balls dancing around, and they grab a ball.
Okay.
And the first ball they grab, that determines that team plays at home in a few weeks. That's how they determine it. I was wondering how they determine who gets to play at home.
Huh.
But they grab the ball. Okay, that team plays at home. Then they grab the second ball, uh-huh, and they're playing against this team. And that's how they do it.
Wow. Okay.
It used to take a long time because they had hundreds of teams playing, but now it's down to four or eight teams playing, so it didn't take very long at all. So our team, which is West Bromwich Albion, they will be visiting Aston Villa. And they're both Premier League teams, so that's happening in March. That's the next game we'll be following. But I'm also very interested in Bradford City, if they can continue. Of the eight teams left, three of them are non-Premier League teams. Blackburn Rovers, second tier, Reading, second tier, and Bradford City, third tier. So, interesting how...
Those are some of the more interesting matchups, too, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
When you see the comparison of the real... everyday guys and these other clubs. So,
and just to give you a sense, this started in August. Hundreds and hundreds of teams involved, because that's how the FA Cup works over in England.
Uh-huh.
And it comes down to a final in May. Mm. And then the team that wins gets to go on to Europa League or Champions League in the European Championship next year. So that's also kind of cool.
Got it. All right. Cool. All right.
We're the only station covering this, by the way, in the United States. I'm certain of that now.
We are. We are.
We only have a few minutes left because we have sports coming up in a few minutes. Basketball. Did we determine if it's a men's team or not? There's no schedule up here. There used to be a schedule.
There's a little placard behind up there. I don't know.
I don't see it. And the website stopped working, or our internet connection stopped working. I'll try to find out.
It's going to be a heck of a game, and we'll have details about that coming up very, very shortly here. We're in the last couple minutes of our show. This is Off the Wall. And may I just say, I switched the program. I couldn't hear myself. So I've been in the other one that's a little harder to hear, uh-huh, the entire time.
We don't receive our own radio station here.
Yes, so it's a lot of static, and I apologize for that. But is that something we have control over, or should I get into our capital improvements? I mean, is there any reason why I wouldn't be able to hear the main microphone in the program channel?
In the program channel or in the transmitter channel?
Program, because I can hear you in program crystal clear. I can't hear myself at all.
Yeah, something's dirty in there, and you'd have to go in and clean it.
So, I'm excited to talk about our hope for improvements here at WUSB. And there's a lot of cool stuff. We can't really get into all the details, but we just want to update the listeners and let everyone know that we're working very hard on a couple projects that may improve some of this stuff, because there are a lot of really good shows, a lot of good coverage during these storms and weather events and so on and so forth, and a lot of excitement from the students. We've seen really positive show. We've been listening. We've heard some great shows since we've been back.
We were driving around listening to the radio, and we got to our destination, and we didn't want to leave the car.
We didn't. We were so enthralled with some of the student programming here at USB, and we just love working with them and talking, and we want to maybe do some improvements, maybe get some better gear, a little more updated console. And
we have a number of projects.
We do.
One project is getting the squirrel out of the studios. There's a squirrel running around here someplace.
I heard.
Building facilities needs to figure out how it's getting into the building.
I heard there was a trap brought in. I want to get into it. Yeah, but
you know what? One trap is not going to help. There's a million squirrels out there. I don't know if you've seen, but they're all over the place. And one goes into a trap, more are going to come in looking for them.
Right.
But okay, that's one project. The other project is getting some new equipment that we had donated to us from a commercial radio station up and running
years ago, and it's sitting around.
We've been trying to organize that, but I think we can do it. And of course, this whole building is being imploded at some point, but that's another project. And these are all challenges. We still have to be assigned a new space, and hopefully we'll get the space that we deserve, because we have all kinds of things. You might hear from ignorami. Is that the right plural phrase?
Ignorami, yes.
That radio is a dying breed, and that's why why Radio Shack's going out of business. No, it's not true. Certain types of radio, yes. Certain types of radio that are emulated by your iRiver or iPod or whatever, nobody needs that. But non-commercial radio, where we talk about interesting things, that is always going to be interesting. In fact, if anything, it's going to be expanding. Oh, I see. I'm being Emmy awarded out of the place.
That's a good talk. Good talk. I'm glad you said that. No, I'm serious. We'd also like to use the equipment that we have here a little better.
Yeah.
So, to that end, if you hear about anybody wanting equipment or students organizing stuff or producers building stuff in the station we have or looking for new spots, please support them. Please support the fund drives and support WUSB.
We have a marching band in here now that is pushing us out of the way. It's Fat Tuesday. It's Mardi Gras.
Woo!
Mardi Gras, everybody. I had no idea it was this early. So we'll let them play us out. And basketball is coming in. The Seawolves are up at Albany.
Oh yeah, Seawolves.
It's men or women, one of them. Maybe it's both. I don't know.
In Albany? Is it Albany? Yeah,
Albany, New York,
men's,
the capital.
Women's, it's all kinds
of
sports.
It's a basketball team of some sort.
Major basketball. It's coming up next, people. Thanks for listening. Also, one more thing, everybody. Please, if you'd like to write to us, it's otw@2600.com. Thanks a lot.
Step through the global window, alternating Thursday evenings for a trip around the world through the FM ethers of WUSB 90.1 FM. I'm Chris, and I'll be your host on the Global Rhythms program every other Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Tune in and expand your musical horizons on Global Rhythms on WUSB, Stony Brook.
Hello, this is Steve Peichel, head coach of the Stony Brook men's basketball team, and you're listening to the longtime home of Seawolf Sports, WUSB.
And it is a pleasure to have you here with us on this Tuesday evening, 22 degrees on the North Shore of Long Island. I'm Dave Mullo. Tonight, a very special broadcast of Stony Brook Seawolves basketball men's team in action. They are up in the Capital District taking on the Albany Great Danes. Let's send it to the CEFQ Arena. It's Kurt Hilton and Jeff Bernstein.
And thank you very much, Dave Mullo. It's a pleasure to have you join us, everyone, and welcome to Stony Brook Seawolves basketball. Kurt Hilton, along with my broadcast partner, Jeff Burns, as we've made the journey up to the Capital District today, and snow-free all the way on the road, a very nice and comfortable commute on the way up, and just a little while, a big tip-off as the Seawolves take on the Albany Great Danes. Jeff, welcome aboard.
Yeah, just another great night in the chapters of Stony Brook Albany, and like you said, it was a pretty smooth ride up here this afternoon. And the Seawolves right now, fourth place in the America East. The Albany Great Danes have had a fabulous season at 12-0, should be an interesting game for Stony Brook. Will they come to play against these Great Danes who have had a great season? Will they not come to play? A little emotional for Albany. Peter Hooley's first game back here at Albany should be exciting for them. But for Stony Brook, do they want to continue to call up the America East? They played well for the last two games, Kurt. And do they want to trickle into the three spot to possibly move ahead of New Hampshire? Do they want to stay at the four? Those are the things that the fans are thinking. But right now, I think Stony Brook wants to be the team that beats Albany. Albany's 12-0. They want to be that team that could say, okay, we want to beat Albany, build some momentum, so that if it happens to be the chance that the Seawolves are back here in the semifinals, they could say, hey, they beat Albany. So I think right now, let's not look ahead of tonight. Let's look at just playing better right now.
Absolutely. I mean, right now, if you're the Seawolves and Steve Peichel, just got to try and win games and win as many games as you can. And when you look at the record, Stony Brook comes into this game 17-10 overall, 8-4 in the America East, and as Jeff alluded to, Albany 18-7 overall, but 12-0 unblemished so far in the America East, with four conference games for each team remaining. Stony Brook came off a very convincing win over Maine on Saturday. They beat the Black Bears 80-52. Albany is coming off, obviously, a win of its own. A tight game, non-conference. They stepped out of the conference for NJIT, and they beat an NJIT team that, remember, beat Michigan earlier in the year. They beat NJIT 65-59. Their last conference game was back on February 10th against Binghamton, and at Binghamton, they won that game 62-46. This is an all-time series that's transcended Division I, goes all the way back to the Division III days, and Albany leads the all-time series 38-27, but Stony Brook leads 19-17 since joining Division I in 1999. but Albany has spoiled the Seawolves' chances a couple of times, and that is what is first and foremost on most people's mind when they're rooting for Stony Brook. Last time the two teams met, the Great Danes won 64-47 back on January 19th. Since then, the Seawolves have stubbed their toe against Vermont and New Hampshire, but as they look to get things squared away, Steve Peichel trying to see if he can have his troops be the first team to knock off the Great Danes. Moments ago, Jeff Bernstein had an opportunity to talk to Coach Peichel about the main recap and tonight's game.
Moments before tonight's game between Stony Brook and Albany, we're talking to the head men's basketball coach, Steve Peichel. And, Coach, a great win by the Seawolves against Maine at the Island Federal Credit Union Arena. You had to be happy with that effort.
Well, a real happy team effort. Did a great job, I thought, on the defensive end, first and foremost, really tied up their guards, kept them out of the lane. Leading scorer, Kevin Little, was averaging 22 points going into that game, held them to 7 points, and a few of those points were scored at the very end of the game. So I liked our effort. I loved 21 assists, 8 turnovers. That was a high for us for the season. Obviously, Roland Namaya was 24 points, a career high for him, career high for D thrower of assists, 7 assists, 1 turnover, a career high of rebounds for Ray McGrew, 15. So had a lot of great efforts in that game, and 80 points on the board too. Both, spoke well of our offense, but more importantly, spoke well of the defense that we're getting out of our guys.
Yeah, definitely a great effort. New challenge today, it's Albany. It's always been a battle with Stony Brook and Albany. I know you weren't happy with the effort at Stony Brook against Albany, but new game. New challenge for the Seawolves. Some general thoughts about how the Seawolves coming out for tonight's game.
I mean, really have to play, outstanding basketball. It's a team that's undefeated in league play. They're very experienced. Wasn't happy at all with the results of the first game. Really showed our inexperience and our youth. And hoping for a great effort tonight. And we're really going to be a barometer here for where we are and how much better have we gotten, as the season's progressed here. So I'm excited. I think our guys are. We had a couple days to prepare. Would have liked more time, but it never seems to be the case when we play Albany. And one of our days was spent traveling. So feel good, and I think our guys feel good, and we're going to see again exactly where we are.
What are some of the concerns about the Great Danes tonight?
Well, I mean, like anything, they got really good offensive players, at every position. They throw the ball inside. They do a real good job. Yeah, they do a real good job sharing the game and, very well coached. And, one of those teams that, has had a lot of guys that have won a lot of games. So any number of them can step up the course of this game. And we have to do a real good job of attacking all the various defenses and really making shots, Jeff. A lot of this boils down to, making shots. Against Maine the other night, we made 11 threes when the ball went in. We got good looks. I'm always only concerned about if we're getting good looks or not. We got good looks against Albany last time, missed a lot of shots. So hopefully tonight those same looks will go in.
Coach, best of luck tonight.
Thanks, Jeff.
Steve Peichel, the head men's basketball coach, Stony Brook University, as the Seawolves getting set to take on the Great Danes at Albany. And the storyline up here at Albany is in his first game back after a 3-week absence due to the unfortunate death of his mother, Peter Hulu scored 10 points to surpass the 1,000-point mark in a 65-59 win at NJIT. 5 Great Danes were in double figures, including Sam Rowley with 16, Ray Sanders with 12, Hulu, who had his 10, Dallas Enema with 10, and Evan Singletary, who's kind of being known as Big Shot Evan around the Albany parts with his propensity for hitting game-winning shots. He had 10 as well. That non-conference tilt marked Albany's 13th straight victory, and it also came on Friday the 13th, if you're at all interested in that sort of thing. I think you're a little bit triskaidekaphobic, right, Jeff? But the Danes held the Highlanders to 37% from the field and 3 of 12 from three-point range in the second half. And that's how they got there. Seawolves, meanwhile, they hit a season high in three-pointers, 11 and 21 assists versus a dismantling of Maine that The final score was 80-52, but throughout the game, if you were there, you understand it wasn't really that close.
No, and Albany playing with a lot of emotion, as you mentioned about the whole Hooley situation. Stony Brook's got to play with a lot of aggression, Kurt. Got to be aggressive tonight. You got to look to try to beat this Albany team and build momentum as we go into the final 2 weeks of the America East season.
Now, if you're a Seawolves fan, there are some numbers that you like. Rayshon McGrew tallied his eighth double-double of the season with 10 points and a career-high 15 rebounds. The Seawolves, by the way, are 6-2 when he does that. Roland Niyama, 24 points in 24 minutes against Maine. And this is a big number. Jameel Warney and Trey Purifoy combined to score 43 points against in the UMBC game. And Purifoy continued to play well with seven assists against Albany. So very key players. All those names named for a reason, because the Seawolves will need all hands on deck as they take
Absolutely.
On a tough Great Danes team. We're now going to turn it over to the public address announcer for our national anthem.
Ladies and gentlemen, please rise and remove your caps as we honor America with the playing of our national anthem. Tonight's anthem will be performed by the New Albany Pep Band.
Pep Band performing their national anthem, and then right away they shift into college get you revved up music. And as Jeff, I know you're already revved up for this game. Looking at this matchup, Seawolves have had such a tough time now last couple of times with Albany. What are your keys?
The Seawolves need to play some good defense, need to be aggressive on the offensive side, and they need to get great efforts from two people, Jameel Warney, which is obvious, and Trey Purifoy. Those two guys really need to show that they are all-conference players tonight. You know, you can't expect really much from the other guys. They've been young and consistent, but if the two guys can lead the Seawolves tonight in both areas, offensively and defensively, I think the Seawolves have a good shot of winning tonight.
Let's look at the starting lineups. We'll start with the Seawolves. They'll start in the backcourt, Deshaun Throwers, inserted into the starting lineup a couple of games ago against UMBC. He's a 6'2 freshman guard from Muskegon, Michigan. Carson Purifoy, we'll call him Trey. He's a 6-foot junior guard from Winona, New Jersey. And then up front, start in their backcourt, Evan Singletary. He's a 6'1 junior transfer guard from Baltimore, Maryland. He'll join Ray Sanders, a 6'4 junior from Tuscaloosa, Alabama. And up front, Dallas Enema, a 6'6 forward from Sheldon, Iowa. Richard Peters, a 6'11 sophomore center from Pickering, Ontario. And their star forward, 6'6 senior from Sydney, Australia, Sam Rowley. And of course, they'll also be joined for his first home appearance since going back home to Australia, Peter Hooley, a 6'4 junior sharpshooter from Adelaide, Australia, who scored 10 points against NJIT, picked up his 1,000th career point. So a warm welcome for him here tonight as he was introduced to the crowd outside of the starting lineup. Your head coaches for tonight, Steve Teichel in his 10th season at Stony Brook University. His assistants, Jay Young, Lamar Chapman, and Dan Ricard. Will Brown, the dean of the America East coaches in his 14th season at Albany. His associate head coaches, his assistant head coaches, Chad O'Donnell, John Yachty, a former player of his, and Josh Pelletier. The officials for tonight, Paul Fea, Earl Walton, and Ron Tamersky.
We've been doing this a long time. Remember, it's like yesterday that Will was the interim head coach as an assistant and then became the head coach, and you said 14 seasons. And
I thought the very same thing, and we don't like to dwell on those types of numbers.
No.
We're moments away from tip-off. I mean, I remember Will Brown taking over during that interim season when they barely had enough players to fill out the roster.
Right.
Finished the game once with five players on the court. I mean, they just had so few players at that time. And boy, four NCAA tournament appearances later,
right.
He's still going strong.
Done a fabulous job here at Albany, the Will Brown, the Miller Place resident, former resident. That's where he grew up, played at Miller Place High School.
Dowling grad, so Miller Place producing a terrific head coach who's definitely honed his skills up here. Stony Brook in their road reds, trimmed with gray numbers outlined in white. Albany with their home whites, trimmed with purple and gold, purple numbers outlined with gold. Seawolves going left to right on your radio. And Warney against Peters, jumping center, and the tip is controlled by the Seawolves on the offensive end. Here's Purifoy, try to enter it in right block into Warney, deflected away, last touch by Peters. So the Seawolves retain possession, 24 on the shot clock. They'll inbound from the sideline.
See how Albany, Kurt, plays Warney. A lot of teams are double, triple teaming. See how Albany plays him straight up.
Purifoy off the entry, end of the left elbow, gives it out to thrower, left wing, now right wing, Niyama. Right baseline, Purifoy. Up top, McGrew thought about the long jumper. Passed it up instead to Niyama. Now right wing thrower. Seven on the shot clock. Gets into the lane. Puts up the runner. Can't get it to go. There is glue-fingered Warney on the putback. It looked like it slipped out of his hands. And so Albany comes up with the loose ball, and they are on the offensive end. Here's Enema over to Rowley on the right side. Operates, throws up the banker, hits the side of the rim, so neither team putting up a great shot. Side of the backboard, I should say. Stony Brook comes up with the loose ball and are on the offensive. Here's Purifoy. Kick out to throw right wing. Passes up to three. Left wing, Niyama. Left baseline, Purifoy. Looking to enter it, can't do it. Now over on the right baseline to Niyama. Jab step, now works his way right wing. Right baseline, McGrew. Long jumper from 19 is good. And the Seawolves draw a 2-0 lead at the 18:45 mark.
Silence the crowd there with that shot. And good extra range there by Ray.
Keep saying it every game. The most improved player in the conference. I don't think many people would debate that, especially with 8 double-doubles under his belt. Here is a left baseline three-pointer by Dallas Enema. He was scared for just a moment, so couldn't tell if it was a two or a three, but he gets to the Great Danes on top. Jump hook by McGrew, no good, but he gets his own rebound and kicks it out to Purifoy.
Enema's been on fire for the Great Danes the last couple of games.
Has had a terrific season so far. Enema averaging 5.3 points per game, but very proficient from downtown. Here's Warney trying to power it up against Peters, denied. And the loose ball, Sanders comes out of the pack. Barrels over Thrower, but it's going to be a blocking foul on Deshaun Thrower as he picks up his first. I'll check that. It was Niyama who picks up the foul there. Non-shooting foul, so Albany will inbound from the Seawolf baseline, leading 3-2, 17:51 to go in the first. Off the baseline inbounds, here's Rowley. Now inside to Enema, right elbow. Kicks it back out. Now left side, it's Singletary. Tries to work the pick and roll, can't get it. Kick out Sanders, right wing. Stopped at the foul line, deflected away. Warney comes up with the loose ball, and then McGrew runs it down. Here's Purifoy on the attack. Status step. Puts up the floater, gets it to go, and one, and he'll draw the foul.
Good defense by the Stony Brook Seawolves. Warney sliding down, picking up the rebound. And we talked about this all the time, Kurt, defense creating the offense. And right there, Seawolves are in transition. Good decision by Purifoy to draw the foul, and luckily made the basket.
So Purifoy with the conventional three-point play opportunity and rattles it home. So the Seawolves have a 5-3 lead with 17:26 to go in the first half. That foul was charged to Evan Singletary, his first. There's Albany back on the offensive end. Here's Enema, drops it down to Rowley. Spin move from the left block, puts it up on the baseline. Might have had it partially defended. Peters, if the second attempt, has it blocked away. Goes up again, denied again. Two blocks by the Seawolves there as both McGrew and Warney contesting. Here's Niyama. Look for the open three. Closed off quickly. Kicks it from the right side up top to Purifoy.
I like how the Stony Brook defense so far is playing, Kurt.
Off the high pick and roll. Now to Niyama. Catches it clean. Three-pointer. That's no good from the right wing. And here comes Sanders. Sanders kick out to Enema. Contested three. Rims in and out, but there's Peters on the spot. Up and under move. Lays it up and in. And Albany to within a point. 5-4. As Peters checked that five up, as Peters finds the connection from down low. We're tied at 5, 16:23 to go here in the first half. Pace picking up. Here's Purifoy. Right elbow over to McGrew. Now finds Niyama. Cut off on the baseline. Little pick and roll. Gives it to McGrew. And offensive foul on the Rayshon on the pick and roll.
Steve Peichel didn't like that call.
Very close, bang, bang on that one.
But a good game so far. Both teams playing very physical. You can see the Seawolves underneath doing a nice job as McGrew comes in and Sturdivant. McGrew comes out and Sturdivant comes in for the Seawolves.
So McGrew sits down after picking up his first. And Tyrell Sturdivant, a 6'7 freshman from Chester, Pennsylvania, checks in. Front court, here's Albany. Rose hands it off to Enema. Top of the circle, now drives inside, loses the basketball. Let's see if it was deflected out. Nope. So the Seawolves will take over from their baseline. But stoppage on the floor, timeout on the floor, so we'll take timeout as well. 15:54 to go in the first half. We're tied at 5. Seawolves on the road taking on the Albany Great Danes. You're listening to Stony Brook Seawolves basketball right here on the longtime home for Seawolves Sports, WUSB.
Hi, this is Boomer Esiason, formerly of the New York Jets, and you're listening to Division I Seawolves Sports on WUSB 90.1 FM.
All right, gentlemen, back here at the WUSB studios here on Long Island, coming up to 10 minutes past 7 p.m. I'm Dave Mullo, taking a quick look. Local high school basketball playoffs in action this week in the Suffolk Class AA first round. Kings Park has ousted Riverhead 69-51, and it was Copaig over Half Hollow Hills East 58-42. In Nassau Division A quarterfinals, Wantagh defeats Island Trees 69-36. It was North Shore over Division 66-37, and Floral Park ousts Manhasset 66-52. Seawolves and Great Danes all tied up. Let's head it back to our Capital District. In Albany, it's Kurt and Jeff.
Thank you very much, Dave. Back here at SEFCU Arena on the campus of University of Albany. Stony Brook taking on the Great Danes. We're tied 5-5, 15:54 to go in the first half. And despite one of their last five, Albany is tied. They're shooting 29% from the field, 2 of 7 overall. The Seawolves 33%, 2 of 6, only a shot difference. Rebounding very balanced at 5-4. The Great Danes holding a one rebound edge. And in the early going, Jeff, you pointed it out, Seawolves defense definitely very spirited, and they're getting after it a little bit.
Yeah, they are. And I like that move that Richard Peters made against against Warney in the low post, really was patient. And that's one of the reasons that Albany has been very, very good. Low post threat. No one really thought Peters was going to be so much of an impact to Albany. But his length, his size, his patience has helped them. So Warney's going to be in battle all game tonight.
Doesn't score a ton of points at 2.3 points per game, but is capable of reaching double digits in points and rebounds. And the thing that you can't coach, as they say, Jeff, is the size. 6'11", 275, and Will Brown loves that type of player in the pivot, a guy who will clog the middle and just force teams to change shots, even if he's not a pure shot blocker, just a guy who's going to alter the way you attack the rim. Out of the timeout, Seawolves with the basketball. Albany playing a 3-2 zone, and the Seawolves turn it over as Niama threw a pass intended for Purifoy that missed the mark, so Albany will take over.
Can't make those kind of mistakes at this level. You've got to play precision basketball.
Starters in, still in for Albany. They'll play extended minutes. Seawolves have one non-starter on the floor. It's Sturdivant in place of McGrew. Here's Rowley, tried to skip it over backside to Sanders. It was deflected by Deshaun Thrower. So Thrower knocked it out of bounds. So Albany will inbound from in front of the Seawolves bench. Albany, meantime, will substitute, and checking in for his first action is Mike Rowley, a 6'8 senior and the brother of Sam, as he replaces Peters. Kick out in the corner to Sanders, and Sanders knocks down the three. And so Albany takes an 8-5 lead at the 15-10 mark. Here's Niama, bottled up on the corner. Up top now to Purifoy. Left wing to Thrower. Eyes the defense, now reverses it. Over to Niama. Foul line extended, now kicks out to Thrower. Up top to Purifoy. Purifoy dribble drive inside, out to Niama. Niama fakes the three, now drives inside, finger rolls it and banks it off glass. Nice looking move by Rowland as the Seawolves close to within one. 8-7, 14-40 to go in the first half.
Seawolves have to work on that perimeter defense. Nice job by Niama. Had a great game against Maine last weekend.
Singletary, bounce pass right side over to Enema. Watch closely there by Niama. Up top now to Singletary. Works off the pick and roll. Skips it out to Sanders. Passes up the left wing three. Now gets it left elbow to Rowley. Up top, Singletary. Stagger dribble. Puts up the floater. Wild shot. But there is Rowley. Mike Rowley. And Mike Rowley on the putback attempt fouled hard. Knocked to the deck. And the Seawolves will pick up their second team foul.